Thanks so much for being here. Tell me why you are in town.
Well, Maria, it's always good to come home, that's for sure. It's it has been a busy session, and I haven't been home for a little while, and just wanted to get back and touch base with the community. We're going to have a town meeting tonight at 6:30 at K-High, that's the primary reason why we came back. It was a point in the legislature where everybody kind of needed to take a brief respite, and we'll get back hard at it on Monday of this coming week. We're here just to check in with the community and give them an update as to where things stand in the legislature, and particularly where things stand in relationship to the need for a fiscal plan and the need to make some tough decisions in order to get us on that fiscal path of sustainability, which is what I talked about quite a bit in this last campaign. Was, you know, it's really essential that the state does that. So I'm here to give the community an update. So that's what brings me back. And, of course, I want to see my wife, Lori, and check in with the dog and all that, too.
Okay. And, Pat Pitney, why did you come along?
Well, I came along because of the fiscal plan and really being able to talk about the implications of the fiscal plan necessity for our state. And if there's questions beyond what the representative can answer, that people want to ask about what does the governor's office think, came here to support that and be available for any questions that the community might have on, you know, what the governor thinks and how we might move the fiscal plan forward.
And what is the status of the fiscal plan right now?
Well, fortunately, we have two plans on the table. One is a plan and one is a partial plan. The House passed a complete fiscal plan here in the past week. So all the components for a complete fiscal plan are now on the table. And now it's a negotiation between the House and the Senate to be able to move that all the way through and get the bills on the desk for the governor to sign.
When you talk about the partial plan, is that the Senate plan?
The Senate has one piece of the plan. It is the cornerstone piece of Permanent Fund Protection Act. The House has passed a very similar Permanent Fund Protection Act piece. But the Senate, just having that one piece does not solve the problem. It still leaves a structural deficit, and we have fiscal gaps going forward. And, you know, we can look forward to, you know, 3-4 years of additional deep cuts versus significant constraint. I think it's important to note that the House plan, although has all the revenue pieces, the revenue pieces don't add up to what we currently have in place for spending. So we have to have continued spending constraint over the next foreseeable future. I don't see us ever getting out of a very constrained budget environment.
And Dan Ortiz, did you have something to add? You look like you wanted to chime
in.
Well,
yeah. As I said earlier, for a lot of reasons, the state needs a fiscal plan. Mainly what I've heard out there from my constituents when I was out walking and talking about the issue, for certainty's sake, for, you know, certainty for business, certainty for school districts, just so people know that we're on a path that we can sustain ourselves. That's really important. It's important to the overall economy. I can't see us ever getting back to any kind of a capital budget unless we have a fiscal plan in place, which could then potentially, at least in some ways, allow us to reestablish somewhat of a capital budget. And that's important because, you know, as we go year to year without any infrastructure spending, without any capital investment, you begin to see added costs due to deterred maintenance of roads, ferries, those kinds of things, which then only exasperates the problem. So for me, you know, that was what what I heard most often, you know, nobody's excited about added revenue, whether it's an income tax or a sales tax or whatever type of tax you have. I know I'm not excited about that. But the reality is that the added revenue piece has to be a part of it in order for us to create that sustainability, in order for us to create certainty for people, certainty for businesses. The bond rating, you know, the state's bond rating, I think, has been downgraded these last couple of years, and primarily because the raters didn't see us as having a clear path as to how we were going to deal with our obligations. So that in itself, you know, by having a downgrade in our bond rating, if we want to finance any major project in the state, whether it's a gas pipeline or any other kind of major project, that's going to cost the state more because of the fact that we've been hurt in our bond rating. So for a variety of reasons, it was really important for my particular caucus to put forward a complete plan that, if it were adopted, would give some certainty out there for throughout the state and, you know, allow business to know that the state's in good hands, they're on a path, and it might merit their further investments, their own investment dollars in the state, which is really important if we want to grow this economy. So,
and what are the key highlights of that plan?
Our plan has from the beginning, you know, our finance co-chair, Paul Seaton, put together what he called a four-pillared plan. And the plan included further ways that we can sensibly reduce the budget, which we did that. We reduced the budget this year by, I believe it was about $80 million. So it included some reductions. The second part of the plan was to begin to use the permanent fund as a revenue source to help fund some of government operations. And hence, both sides, the Senate and the House, there was a consensus that as our oil revenue, tax revenue began to drop drastically from around $9 billion a year down to about $1 billion a year, a little bit more than that. When we saw that happen, everybody knew that, okay, where can we replace some of that revenue? And the most obvious place was to begin using some of the permanent fund earnings reserve to create some revenue for the state. So, again, that was the second part of the plan. It was a plan that there was the broadest consensus throughout the legislature and from the governor's office. Everybody kind of realized that was going to be a necessary part. So that was the second part of the four-pillar plan. And then for us, we thought that it was really important to look again at the whole tax structure and credit structure for the oil industry. And so we passed HB 111. Which does exactly that. It ends what they call the cashable credit part of the program, and we were the only regime, as they call it, only state to have cashable credits as a part of the incentives for people to do business in our state. And frankly, we were building up obligations to the tune of around about $900 million, $1 billion, and we just don't have the cash in order to keep that program up. So we sent over a bill to the Senate. It's in their hands right now, HB 111, which ends the cashable credit part of the program. It also changes the state to the tax system to a net profit tax as opposed to a gross tax, which, you know, in this low price environment, it's not going to create that much more revenue for the state. Maybe about $20 million, something like that.
Very small.
But the big piece of that plan was to end those cashable credits because we just couldn't simply afford them. So now that's in the hands of the Senate. So that was the third part of the plan. And then finally, added revenue. You know, everybody has said, both on the Senate side and the House side, they've used the term "and added revenue." And, of course, what that means is some sort of tax. And you know, it was a big lift for me personally and a big lift for our caucus to step up and vote for establishing a progressive education funding tax is what it's titled. So it's an education income tax is really what it is. So we voted to put that forward as the fourth and final piece of our package, the fourth pillar of the plan. And so we've sent that over to the Senate as well. And so it's in their hands. And Pat's already talked a little bit about the differences between the two plans and where they sit. And it's just going to be, as Pat was saying, the process of negotiation now and going into what they call conference committee to work out the differences between those two plans.
And you mentioned the education income tax that goes toward education, that specifically would fund education?
You know, constitutionally, you can't dictate that it goes there. You can't mandate that it goes there. But we have in the wording of the bill that it may be put into there, into that. And so it basically what it would effectively do, if the Senate agrees, it would effectively forward fund education. So we take the education, at least part of the education bill, off the table and saying, well, everybody knows there is this money that will likely go to education and to the, what do they call it, Pat? The education funding? What do they call that account? There's a specific count, isn't there?
Public school fund?
Yeah, public school trust fund, I believe it is, or public school fund. The way that we passed that bill, we had to use the word may, but the intent of it is to show our commitment to public education and that, you know, our majority is definitely committed to, as we go down this path of fiscal restraint, we don't want to put it on the backs of the education system and the backs of our youth, because that's our future. That's where, that's where the future of our history goes, is with how well we do at educating our youth and preparing them for the workforce and those kinds of things. So that's the idea.
Okay. And Pat Pitney, you mentioned, and you did as well, Dan Ortiz, now it's in negotiations and working out. How does that process work, and where are the contentious areas, I guess? Where are the barriers to coming to consensus?
Well, the process, we'll start with that. The process is each body selects a small negotiating team to work together on specific bills. And so you have a conference committee for the operating budget, and you have a conference committee for the permanent fund bill. The Senate right now is looking at the oil tax credit and tax adjustment that the House passed. They have not yet passed that. We assume that they will pass a version. They will have a small team that negotiates that. Then the biggest item of contention, of course, is the education tax. And the kind of the difference is the Senate's plan is to continue to cut education, the university, marine highway system, transportation in general, and health and social services for this year and the next 2 years at a fairly significant rate, and not put in new revenue and depend on depleting our savings in the foreseeable future through the 10-year plan, where the House says, let's constrain spending, not add to it, find places to save. Every year it's a little bit harder to find places to save, but continue to reduce the budget, but maintain especially education and the university, but have this tax that not only allows us to maintain those important services, but allows us to maintain our savings balance as well. And that savings balance, the earnings just from the savings balance, would offset what we would have to pay in a future tax.
So this session has gone past the 90 days.
Yes.
Any sense of how long it will take to reach consensus?
That is a really tough thing to estimate. You know, it very possibly could end relatively quickly. You know, we might be able to get our work done in the next 3 weeks. But then again, it could drag out as well. It's just really hard to say right now. I think we'll be able to tell a lot once we start our conference committee process and see how that goes, see if there's the willingness for both sides to compromise, and if there's that general willingness to compromise at the onset, you know, then that could set the momentum in place to resolve things relatively quickly. However, in those first committees, if there's no, we're not budging, and no, they're not budging, well, then that not budging thing could last a while. So we'll just see.
And the budget obviously is the big thing, the main focus. Are there other things you're working on?
Oh, certainly. You know, I'm really, really excited about the other day we passed out of House Finance the Mental Health Timber Exchange Bill, which, of course, is an important piece of legislation to our community and the whole issue of making sure that Deer Mountain continues to be protected. And I know there's some lands there in close proximity to Petersburg is it also that was, you know, potentially at risk there. We passed out of House Finance the Timber Exchange Bill, and I'm looking forward to carrying it on the House floor, and I think we're going to get that passed out so that that particular piece of legislation mirrors what the federal delegation has in place and what they're working at getting passed at the federal level. And if that happens during this particular session, then that issue is resolved, and Deer Mountain is saved, and the mental health folks get to have access to some land so that they can monetize those lands and do what they're supposed to do, which is to look out for the, you know, mental health needs of the people in the state of Alaska. And so I see it, you know, I see it as a triple win if we can get that piece of legislation through the entire legislature. It's already passed on the Senate side. If we can get it through the entire legislature and the governor signs it, then that's big. It's big for the timber industry, places like Viking Lumber over on Prince of Wales Island. It might provide them some timber to access in the future, in the near future, so that they can bridge to hopefully getting access to some more federal lands down the road. Which it's my understanding that the U.S. Forest Service, has a plan to eventually move towards second growth timber and that kind of thing. So, you know, maybe we'll see a little, at least preservation, if not, reigniting of the timber industry down here in Southeast Alaska. So it could be that bill could be a win for them. I think it's a win for Ketchikan in terms of, the tourist industry and recreation folks who, you know, I'm sure we've all been up Deer Mountain on more than one occasion, and that's a pretty important viewshed to our community, to our tourist economy, those kinds of things. So it would be a win there, and again a win for the folks at Mental Health Trust who have their obligations as well.
Okay. So. Those are my main questions. Do either of you have anything else you'd like to add?
You know, I would like to talk a little bit also about some fishing legislation that I push forward. You know, we have HB 56, which is a boat loan fund, revolving loan fund bill that will allow a little bit more access to those particular resources in that revolving loan fund. And I think it'll help do the most to help young fishermen, potential fishermen who want to enter into the industry, not just as deckhands, but as captains and those kinds of things. It allows them to borrow money to buy a permit, to buy a boat, to buy equipment, those kinds of things. So if we get passage of that bill, it just might make it a little bit easier for younger fishermen, to get involved in the industry, which is an important issue because, you know, we've talked about the problems of the graying of the fleet and the average boat captain, average age of a boat captain is getting older and older. And, you know, it's important that we do whatever we can to facilitate, to augment that really vibrant part of our economy here in southern Southeast Alaska, which is the fishing industry. So have that bill. I have a couple of other bills that would push forward the mariculture industry a little bit. That's a fledgling industry that's looking to get moving towards what they hope is down the road, 30 years down the road, a $1 billion a year industry. But they need a little jump start, and I've got two little bills that that work to do that. You know, I've been working out there trying to address the needs of the folks here in southern Southeast Alaska, and particularly looking at protecting as best I can, you know, our economy through the timber industry and through the fishing industry, which is, you know, and through the tourist industry, which of course is really the driving forces here in our local region. So, yeah, I'm excited about those and looking forward to hopefully getting those passed and so that those particular industries can move forward.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.